Hello and welcome to the Weekly Stuff Podcast with Jonathan Lack.
And Sean Chapman.
We are here to talk about stuff this week on the show. I got a new TV, so we're going to talk about that.
Wow.
So that's exciting.
Yeah.
We've both been playing some games, doing some stuff. For our main news item this week, HBO Max announced they will be funding the Zack Snyder cut of Justice League.
Zack Snyder's Justice League.
Not an Onion headline. This is real. We will talk about this.
Yeah.
I've done some research, and we have a lot to say about that later on. It's going to be probably a short one today. We are also recording the next episode of Weekly Suit Gundam, our sister show. That will be coming out next week because I'm going to be out of town, and that will kick off the one-year anniversary month of Weekly Suit Gundam because that show turns 1 year old on June 9th. So we are planning on doing episodes on After War Gundam X, Turn A Gundam, and a big one-year anniversary celebration, maybe something else.
Yeah.
I think you have a little surprise that we want to do as well.
Yes, we've got some stuff in the works.
Involves the country of Canada,
yes.
Which you would not expect to come up in a discussion of Gundam.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think they even go to Canada in Gundam.
Very rarely.
Very rarely.
Yeah. Maybe there might be a moment after War Gundam X, because they're in North America a lot.
But yeah, but who knows. I guess Canada does make an appearance in G Gundam.
Because yes, with the Lumber Gundam.
Yes.
Yeah.
But many countries do. So anyway, that's all coming next week. I'm sorry we keep making you wait for the After War Gundam X episode, but it's going to be a good one, because that's a very special little show that not enough people know about.
Yeah.
So we'll be talking about that next week. Today's just going to be kind of a fun shooting the shit episode, as well as talking about our favorite topic, Zack Snyder's Batman movies.
Yeah, you know, it's been a while since we've had DC movie style news because, I mean, you know, the entertainment news has slowed down a lot for obvious reasons.
Yeah.
But specifically, the DC movie project is mostly dead at this point outside of, like, Wonder Woman 2 and Birds of Prey. And they're, like, doing their own individual movies.
Yes.
But the great train wreck of the DC cinematic universe,
yeah,
we thought was gone.
And the first Justice League movie directed by Zack Snyder... Saw to that.
Yes.
That completely killed it. So now we're getting another one. We'll see. Anywho, we will talk about all of that later on. For now, Sean, let's talk about some stuff. I said this at the beginning, so I just want to talk about it. I got a new TV.
Yeah, this is crazy. Like, I had no idea this was something you were thinking about. I think you had asked me about TV stuff like a year ago because you saw my very nice TV.
You have a very nice TV. What brand is yours?
It's like a Roku something or other.
Okay.
I forget what it's called.
That's okay.
Yeah, I just look at it. I don't think about it much.
That's fine.
Yeah.
I was just curious because, yes, I've been envious of your TV. I was envious of my brother's TV. He also had a very nice one in Japan, which he could not bring back with him. I think he gave it to someone.
Yeah.
But because that would have been difficult, obviously. Uh-huh. But anyway, so I have been wanting to get a 4K TV for a while. I am very... I have always been, and I think I get this from, like, my dad, very frugal about, like, for whatever reason. I have, like, a nice iPhone. I have a nice iPad. I have a nice computer. I don't buy nice TVs.
Yeah.
And I don't know why. It's very weird. I host a film and gaming podcast. I am a film PhD student.
Yeah.
I should have a nice TV.
You've watched more movies than the vast majority of people on the planet. And a lot of the movies you watch are also on TV because you like watching old movies that you can only watch on TV.
Yeah, and so it's weird. I've never, like even, not just a 4K TV, my 1080p TVs I've had, like, I have basically had the same model of TV since 2011.
Yeah.
And it's never been, I've never had a smart TV. I've never had, when plasma screens were a thing, I've never had that. I've never had anything that's particularly nice. They're, like, they're fine. They're totally fine. But they're not great.
Mm-hmm.
So finally, I've been looking at it for a while. I am currently in Colorado because of the coronavirus and staying with family and stuff. I was planning on finally, because I have some extra money because of, like, the stimulus checks and stuff like that, just saving it. Like, I haven't been buying gas.
Yeah.
So stuff like that. So I had some extra money. I'm like, okay, I'm finally going to do it this summer. The new consoles are coming out. I need, there would be no reason to get a fucking PS5 without a 4K TV.
Yeah.
That would just be stupid. So, like, I'm going to finally get a 4K TV. So I've been researching it, planning on doing it when I was in Iowa. I had narrowed it down to the TV I like, my dream TV I wanted is the one that like every review site says is the best TV without spending a crazy amount of money is the TCL 6 series 55 or 65 inch. And I was looking at the 55 inch because 65 is too big for my setup. So that TV retails for $550. I was thinking about like putting some extra away and doing it later in the summer when I'm back in Iowa. But then I was looking at Best Buy's site this week, and they had an open box one for $320.
Nice.
And I was like, well, let's roll the dice, because maybe it doesn't work. Open box is sometimes a gamble, but I can return it if it's not great. So I went ahead. I had to drive out to fucking Lone Tree, which is like a 30-minute drive, and get it. Perfect. It's in perfect condition. It's wild. We had to clean the screen a little bit, because like, it had some smudges, but that's easy. And then I got a really nice TV for $250 off.
Yeah.
And so I have it now here in Colorado, but I can very easily bring it back to Iowa with me. And Sean, TVs got really nice while I wasn't buying them.
Yeah, no, yeah. It turns out, you know, I'm not sure if I need a lot of, like, the smart TV functionality and stuff. I almost never use it for anything ever. But everything else about TVs, they sure look nice as long as you go in and change all the settings. All the settings are shit. They're absolute garbage to make the TV look terrible. Yeah. But then once you go in with a sane human brain and you turn all the bullshit off and like even out the picture settings, it then looks really nice.
Yes, but this TV is just as good as all the reviewers said. So it is a QLED screen, which is the Samsung proprietary technology that's like not as good as OLED, but it has extra, they call them quantum dots, which basically just makes the LED nicer, but whatever. So it's a QLED screen. It has local dimming. It's full array, so it's got all that stuff. So like full local dimming means you get the real blacks, you know. It's got HDR. It's got both Dolby Vision and HDR10, which is really cool because that means like basically anything in HDR will run on my TV. It can do Dolby Atmos output. Obviously, I don't have anything to play Dolby Atmos, but like it's future-proofed in everything, but it doesn't do like 120 hertz or something. But I don't really need that.
Yeah.
So it does everything. And I've never even seen HDR in action, I don't think. Like, I've seen the approximations of it on YouTube on my screens that do not do HDR. And so the first thing I did is, I booted up. I have my Xbox with me. I've got all my apps on that. So I, plugged that in, turned my Xbox to 4K and everything. And then I went into Disney Plus, because Disney Plus is the only streaming service that like has a ton of 4K stuff and doesn't charge you extra for it.
Right.
Like Netflix, I have Netflix, I don't pay for the 4K, so I don't know. My parents have Netflix. So I went to Disney Plus and I turned on The Last Jedi, because that's the best looking Star Wars movie, and it's a very new movie.
Mm-hmm.
And just blown away, because it was playing in Dolby Vision, 4K, I went to some of my favorite scenes, Crate might be just the best 4K demo scene out there, because it
definitely has a look of like it should be to us in 2020 what The Matrix was in 2000 for like DVD players and widescreen TVs back then.
Yep.
It's just like here's a couple of choice scenes from the movie, and that crate sequence in particular is like it just makes all the colors pop. It looks really nice in that high resolution.
And of course, I've never even seen a movie in 4K before. Except, in movie theaters, obviously, but not at home. And just the number of particles you can see on screen, the way grain resolves is really cool. For because Last Jedi was shot on film. I looked at a couple of Blu-rays I have with me. For some reason, I threw a couple of Blu-rays in the box I brought to Colorado with me. I think because I was thinking of using them for a paper, but I had The Shining with me. And the recent 4K Blu-ray, which I don't have a 4K Blu-ray player yet, but I could use the 1080p one, and like that, just like, oh my god, because Shining is a movie I know like in and out the visuals of, and it's like, oh my god. So that didn't have HDR, but still, like, 1080p Blu-rays look so good on a 4K TV.
Yes.
It's amazing. Like,
it is why I have bought a lot more Blu-rays because I have like way more money than I've ever had in my life, because I have like an actual salary job instead of bullshit like working like a part-time job. Then it was just like watching a couple of Blu-rays on that 4K TV and being like, oh yes, no, this is a significant difference even over watching a Blu-ray on a 1080p screen.
It is. And I will say one thing you do notice on a nice 4K TV is that streaming video looks even more inadequate than ever. Disney Plus does it really, like, what services that can do the full 4K HDR can look really good, but like YouTube videos sometimes look really bad. But anyway, so Blu-rays, just, you really see the difference. I the only full movies I've watched on it, ironically, are a couple of One Piece movies, because I'm going through the One Piece movies, and those have never come out in the West, so I I will just say I pirated them, obviously, because there's no way to get them.
Yeah.
I did what the Straw Hats would do, and I pirated the movies. And I guess they never steal from people, though. They're nice pirates.
Are they? Yeah, that's actually a good point. Are they actually pirates, or are they just people that go around on boats and fight people?
Piracy has a slightly different meaning in the world of One Piece. But anyway, we'll get into that.
Okay. But, no, we won't. This is not One Piece podcast.
I know. But anyway, but I had 1080p Blu-ray rips of the Blu-rays from Japan. Not as nice as the actual Blu-rays, but perfectly good. And those just popped, because it's One Piece movies. They have very nice colors, gorgeous on there. I've watched some Gundam on there. Anime in general looks so nice. I am salivating to get my Ghibli Blu-rays back and check out like Nausicaa and Howl's Moving Castle and shit on there. Like, that's gonna look unbelievable. You know, Disney Plus, like I said, has a lot of 4K stuff. So like, they have a couple of their classic animated movies they've done in 4K Dolby Vision and stuff. So I watched a couple of minutes of Beauty and the Beast and The Lion King. I don't really love those restorations because they basically took out any trace that they were ever made on film, and I think it makes particularly the character animation look just awful. But the colors are really nice, and like seeing like the you know how the beginning of Beauty and the Beast is all those like stained glass windows?
Yes, yeah.
That looks very nice on a 4K TV. Mm-hmm. In terms of gaming, I don't have my PS4 Pro with me right now. I'll be getting that soon.
Yeah.
But, so I don't have any systems that do, like, full native 4K gaming, but the Xbox One S does still do HDR output. So, like, I've been playing a lot of Assassin's Creed Odyssey, and the HDR kicked in on that. Now, that game doesn't run great on the Xbox One S. It runs between, like, 720 and 900p, so the resolution doesn't look great. The HDR is so transformative.
Yeah, HDR is definitely, for me, the bigger different when it's implemented well. Like, yes, some games do it really well, and I haven't played Assassin's Creed Odyssey, but I can imagine, based on seeing normal videos of it, how it would look with HDR with good implementation. That seems like a game well suited to it. There are some games like Monster Hunter World and Red Dead Redemption 2 were two I remember specifically that have really bad HDR implementation that looks better with it off.
Yeah.
But like stuff like Marvel Spider-Man, when you get your PS4, you should just boot up Hitman 2.
Yeah.
Hitman 2 looks so fucking good with HDR on. It's crazy.
That's one I've been wanting to check out, was Hitman. I did. My brother has his PS4 Pro, and I did borrow it for like an hour, and that's how I watched a couple Blu-ray clips, and I did try God of War. I did like the first 10 minutes of God of War. That game looks very nice in 4K.
Mm-hmm.
And I looked at a little bit of Horizon Zero Dawn, which I've never played in full, but obviously looked very nice. And I did play a little bit of one of the Persona dancing games. Not like an HDR game, but just in 4K. I'm like, everything looks better.
Yeah, everything looks better.
It's quite interesting. So yes, but Assassin's Creed Odyssey, the HDR is... Honestly, like, at first I was like, I can't believe this is running on the same fucking piece of hardware, because it just, like, everything's still kind of fuzzy because of the resolution, but just, like, the range of colors I'm seeing is, it looks in places like a different game.
Yeah.
And it's really cool. And that's that makes me want to play that game in, like, full 4K, because it's a nice-looking game. But yeah, so I've been playing around with that. Even the Nintendo Switch, which you would think would struggle, like, upscaling to a 4K TV. I think because 4K TVs are so good at upscaling at this point, it still just looks better. Mm-hmm. Like there are some things, like the new Hatsune Miku game I've been playing. For whatever reason, text looks very bad in that game on a big TV, but that was true on a 1080p TV too.
Right.
But everything else looks very nice. It's super colorful. That's a very colorful game. I turned my TV up to, like, the vivid color palette. Looks great for Nintendo games. I played some Smash Bros. And Mario Kart 8, and those are native 1080p games that are very colorful, and those just look gorgeous on that big TV. Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild. I've known this forever because my brother had a 4K monitor, and then he had a real 4K TV in Japan, and I've seen him play it on those. That game upscales to 4K so well, it feels like magic.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's just because it's a really good-looking game, and games with good art styles upscale well.
Yeah.
But yeah, so all of that has been really cool. Also, just having a big TV. The biggest TV I've ever owned is 43 inches. Which, again, people are like, Jonathan, why do you value yourself so little? You fucking watch movies for a living.
Yeah, like, this is what you do with so much of your time. It's like the course you've selected for your life that you've been doing since you were, like, a little kid, since before I met you.
Yes.
And, yeah, you have always cheaped out on TVs. And I've never really asked about it, but I have always wondered why.
Well, for a long time it was, honestly, because that's the kind of stuff my dad did.
Yeah.
So a 55-inch TV, I know that's not the biggest TV in the world, but, boy, it feels like I was watching the One Piece movie, one of the One Piece movies last night, and I felt like I was in a movie theater. It was so cool. because I can't go to movie theaters anymore. But just it was so neat to see that.
And now that you have a really nice TV, you never have to go to movie theaters.
I know. That's also like part of it.
The improvement is so slim.
Yeah. I mean, literally, because actually, if you think about, like, if you like HDR implementation in movies, movie theaters don't do that.
Yep.
There are some, like I did check out one of the movies I watched last night on Disney Plus, not the whole thing, but clips, was Black Panther, because I did see Black Panther in a Dolby Vision theater, which there are a couple, AMC has a couple of them, they're bankrupt now, AMC had a couple of Dolby Vision theaters, and I saw Black Panther that way, and it was very impressive, and seeing it on my TV, though, I was like, oh, cool, that cost $20 to go to that fucking theater, this is better, mm-hmm. So I'm at home, it's right there. So yeah, it's very interesting. It definitely makes me feel better now about not going to theaters anytime soon.
Yep.
Yeah. So anywho, I will probably talk more about this in the days to come. I've only had it for like 2.5 days, but it definitely is one of those things where I want to like try everything I have on it
because
it's so nice.
It's something, yeah, where it's like you just want to rewatch every movie you've seen. You want to replay every game you've played just to see how much better they look. Yeah.
Yeah.
Especially while it still feels fresh and new. Yes. Then eventually you just get used to it and you don't realize how nice your TV looks.
Yeah. I think that'll take a while for me because it was such a jump for me. Because also, like, the smart TV stuff, I agree, I don't have a huge use for the apps themselves necessarily. But just things like my TV, it's a Roku TV, and it just, you assign inputs and like, say, this is my Xbox, this is my PlayStation.
Yeah,
and they're just, like things there. And you say, hit Xbox and it's going to go turn, you know, like that kind of thing is super nice. And here's another thing I love about this TV. It's got great onboard speakers. And it's got speakers that are so nice built in. I was worried I was going to, because my old speaker system won't work with a 4K TV because the HDMI inputs are too old. So I was going to have to get rid of that. And I knew that and I was fine with that. But I thought I might have to buy a soundbar. I've seen Sean's soundbar. It's nice.
Yes.
I don't need to. Like, I would have to pay quite a bit to get a soundbar nicer than what's on my TV. And I often watch stuff with headphones anyway. So it's like, This TV actually might have saved me money, weirdly. Mm-hmm. But yes, so nice TVs are nice is the moral of this story.
It's true. Yeah, if you watch lots of things on a TV and you have, you know, the money you can square away for it,
yeah,
it is worth the investment. Especially, yeah, you're right, like now with new consoles coming out, it would feel weird. Like, right. I'd like, you know, other than if you're looking at, like, presumably whatever PlayStation exclusives are going to be there, that would be the only reason to upgrade consoles, because the value of the Xbox Series X, you're probably going to have a hard time really appreciating if you're just playing on a 1080p TV,
exactly.
Especially if you have an Xbox One X.
Which can already do a lot of that cool stuff, like performance.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah. It's also, I have to say, Sean, it's not the only new toy I've gotten recently.
Okay.
So I have one other thing to talk about. I got this about a month ago when we first got our stimulus checks. Because this is something I'd wanted forever. But I have not talked about it on the podcast yet because we just were busy and we didn't have time. But I've now had time to play with it. I got an Xbox Elite controller.
Oh, cool.
I got the Elite Series 2. So, stuck at home, watching a lot of videos, seeing people talk about this thing. This is the one that came out in November.
Yeah.
The Elite controller, I think they first put out in like 2015 or something. It was several years ago.
Yeah.
And that's the really nice Xbox controller that has like the swappable sticks and all that. They upgraded it last year and people had been raving about it. I've been playing Xbox more. I've seen my brother's Elite controller and I've always been kind of envious of it because he had one. And I was like, you know what? Fuck it. They finally, they fixed some of the things that had held me back. Like, this has Bluetooth in it now. It's got all the upgrades. We know it's completely forward compatible with the Series X and everything. And I have a little adapter for my Switch that lets me use Xbox controllers. So I'm like, this is something I kind of want.
Yeah.
It is expensive. It's a $180 controller. And for that money, it better be fucking good.
Yeah.
And it is. It is the nicest controller I've ever had. I have it here, Sean. It comes in this super nice case. The case itself is like this very like hard shell thing. It's got a charging dock built in, and you can actually take the charging dock out if you want to use it outside of the case, but you just plug, it's all USB-C, which is nice because that's forward proof, and you just plug the USB-C in the back, you can charge it right in the case, that's really cool. It's got the swappable thumbsticks, it's got the swappable D-pad, and lots of other little improvements, and
it's got like paddles on the back and stuff like that.
Yep. So the paddles were something they added for the first one, and since then paddles have become like a big thing for nice controllers. And yeah, when I first bought this controller, I was trying to figure out what to do with the paddles. And now I can't imagine playing a game without paddles. Mm-hmm. And that's what I've basically heard from everyone who's used this kind of thing. Because the paddles are really, really cool. So I guess I'll just start there, because you have three built-in profiles. You can see, Sean, there are these three light slots, and you program in your three profiles. And you can program literally everything on this controller, down to like the tension of the sticks and the triggers and stuff. But the paddles are the main thing you would want to program, obviously. And I have a couple different profiles. Right now, the two I've been switching between the most is I have one I've made for Halo, and I have one I've made just like a default one that just keeps, basically maps the face buttons on the back. That default one has worked phenomenally for Assassin's Creed. So as an example, in Origins, they switched the play style of Assassin's Creed. So in Origins and Odyssey, all the fighting is done on the sticks and the bumpers. So if you're doing the run, the parkour stuff, you have to hold A. Now, the only problem with that is that you hold A, you can't hold the camera.
Yeah.
So with that, I just have A on this paddle back here, the first paddle, and then I can just do that while I'm running around, and that's great. And I have Y is the input that like picks everything up in the game, and it's really cool to just run around the battlefield with all the fucking dead bodies I've just killed and just tap that paddle and get that. Or B and X also have like X is dodge, and there's stuff like that. So it works great for that. For Halo, I've mapped it so that I have jump on the main paddle back here, because that's jumping is like the nicest thing for paddles. I want to play platformers with this now. And then I have zoom in on the other top paddle, because zoom in, obviously you can just hit the stick, but it's even nicer to not have to like press that down and just tap that button and you're zoomed in. And then I have, I think, change weapon, and I have bash on one of the other paddles. And then I've switched my other parts of the control scheme a little bit, because I moved reload, like in Halo 3, up here to RB. And that way, like, again, kind of your goal is like to never interface with the face buttons, kind of, when you're using the paddle setup. And it's really cool. So I love the paddles. So the thumbsticks are really cool. So you take the thumbsticks off. There's three variants they have in here. There's the main Xbox One style thumbstick, which I do really like. I like that thumbstick a lot. And I think that's best for like shooters and stuff you need precision for. But they also have, Sean, you see I have them on here right now. It are these kind of flat thumbsticks that they call classic, and they look like 360 thumbsticks.
Right.
Although they're even nicer because they're a little smoother and don't kind of have that ridge around them. This I love for platformers or like Assassin's Creed or something like that. They feel really good when you're like holding them down for a long time running around. That's really cool. They also have, I've not used these other two, they have a very tall thumbstick if you want extra precision. I'm not that crazy. I probably won't use that a lot.
Is very tall.
It's literally double the height of the main thumbstick.
It feels like maybe there should have been a middle ground.
Yes.
You know, something that's not like maybe halfway between here and the normal thumbstick height, because that is ridiculously high off the controller.
It is very high. They also have I forget what they call this, but it's basically a concave one or convex that's like an old PlayStation 2 controller kind of thing.
Yeah, or like it looks like a Dreamcast thumbstick. Yeah.
They only have one of these. You can't use it for both, and I don't like that kind of thumbstick, but I think it's cool that it's in there. Thomas likes to use this on his left thumbstick, and then he uses a more precise one on the right. The other big thing they added for the Series 2 specifically is thumbstick tension. So you have this little tool in here, and you just pop the thumbstick off, and then you can... It's like a screw in the thumbstick, and you can adjust the tension. I've had them set at the middle tension, which is a little more tense than the default Xbox One. And if you go all the way, it actually feels a lot like... I'll show you this, Sean. It feels like the old 360, if you use that. You can kind of tell. So that's really cool. Like, that kind of level of customization is great. And I like that extra tension a little bit myself. And then on the back, you can adjust the hair trigger pulls, which I really love. So left trigger and right trigger, you can go just the full pull, you can go kind of a three-quarters pull, or you can go just complete hair trigger. So Sean, you can feel on the left I have complete, and on the other I have partial. And
it basically turns it into a button press rather than a trigger.
Yeah. And I really love this feature. I mostly actually keep it at the middle one for a game like Assassin's Creed, where you have a bow and you want to pull it a little bit, but like the full pull feels unnecessary. I do like that a lot. For Halo, I've just turned them all the way into hair triggers, because you don't need to do a full pull to shoot a gun, and that feels really nice. But then if you're playing a racing game, you turn them back to like the full triggers, and they feel really good. So there's just those levels of customization I love. They've also added a little kind of groove on the triggers that's kind of just feels good under your thumb or your fingers. And those they are actually adding to the Series X controller. Those are going to be on that. The D-pad, I have the round like disco ball D-pad on here, which is funny because I actually barely use that one. I mostly use the real D-pad, and it is the nicest D-pad I've ever used. It feels like using a mechanical keyboard or something. It's crazy clicky and nice.
Yeah,
and
that is nice.
Yeah, it's I like the D-pad on the normal Xbox One just fine, but when you go back to it now, it feels very mushy compared to that. That one is very precise. Yeah. And cool. So, and just like literally everything on the controller feels better. It's got these grips kind of around it that feel very good in the hand. It's made of very premium material. These sticks are literally stainless steel. And when you pull them and like you let them go, you can like feel this like, there's like this oomph to it. The face buttons feel, they're not that different, but like they feel nicer because it's a $180 controller. Everything should feel nicer.
Yes. Yeah.
It's the only Xbox controller they've ever made with a built-in battery. And you charge it over USB-C or in the little dock, and it's got a 40-hour battery life. So it's very, very robust in that way. It's incredibly nice, and I have been loving gaming with it. And when I go back and pick up a different controller, doesn't matter if it's Xbox, PlayStation, Nintendo, they all feel like fucking little toys now.
Yeah.
Because this thing also has the, I think I heard Tim Rogers from Kotaku say this in his review of it, it feels like you're holding a fucking pistol. It's got like the weight of like a gun or something to it. And that's very, very nice. You know, and I like the DualShock 4. DualShock 4 is a great controller. The base Xbox One controller, I think, is great. But when I hold them now, I do inevitably feel like I'm like, going to break this thing.
Yeah, it's like you could put 120 more bucks on this thing, and then we're talking.
Yes, exactly, yeah. Exactly. So I am. I do have a way I can use this on my Switch. I can use this on my Xbox. And I am looking at a way to like maybe get a cheap adapter if I want to use it on my PS4 here and there as well. Although, there's a lot of PS4 games where, like, I can't imagine playing The Last of Us and not having my, like, circle button and stuff.
Sure, yeah.
Because it's so part of the experience.
Yeah, ingrained in your mind. Yeah.
Yes, but this is not something I would buy for myself if I did not have, like, extra government given money. But it is super nice, and if you're someone who, you know, it's kind of like the TV thing. I play games a lot. Mm-hmm. Why not have a really nice controller?
Yeah.
It feels really good. It's super, like the Xbox app, and you can do it on your Windows PC as well, just lets you customize to your absolute heart's content. I don't go that crazy with it, but it's very cool, and certainly for accessibility also, I assume this is very helpful. But yeah, it's a really, really neat device, and I think it's cool that Xbox did that, because you can tell, like, all controller manufacturers have been reacting to the Elite controller a little bit over the last few years. Like, Sony now has that back button attachment thing. Nintendo, the grips around the Pro controller are very clearly based on the original Elite controller. It just feels like they helped move sort of controller quality forward a little bit. I think the PS5 controller has some of those same kind of things built into it. So I think it's cool they did that, because, you know, in the past, if you wanted a really super nice controller, you had to go third party, and that's full of
a treacherous marketplace for sure. Yes. You have to be very careful what you're buying off of that.
Yes. But yeah, it's cool. And I have been playing more and more Nintendo games with an Xbox controller, because I don't like most of the Nintendo controllers this generation.
It feels like Nintendo used to have the one thing always, which was the D-pad was good, and then now they don't have that anymore. And it's like, what's going on, Nintendo? That was your thing. Like, you make the D-pad games. Come on.
You know the one game that is absolutely better with Joy-Con? It's Hatsune Miku. Because the split D-pad mirroring the buttons on the right is perfect for that. And, like, them all being close together. So if you do holds and you have to hold all four, you can literally just press your thumb and do them all. But that's, like, the one.
I could definitely see that.
Yeah.
One day I'll just buy a fucking like ridiculous big four button arcade controller once my life just turns into that. Once I ascend and become my own Twitter avatar, then that's what I'll do.
Absolutely. But yeah, it's playing Smash Bros. Or something with an Xbox controller feels weird at first, then you realize, this is nicer than what Nintendo's offering right now. So there you go. Anywho, so those are my new tech toys I have this week to talk about.
Nice.
I've been playing more Assassin's Creed Odyssey. That game, I like it, and I hate it.
I feel like that's a lot of like what I hear about Assassin's Creed Odyssey. And it's like in like what you hear about it on Twitter and stuff like that depends on where people are at with that game.
Yeah.
And sometimes people are like really glowing of it, and then 2 days later they're like, you know what, I don't know about this game.
It's interesting because it's better than Origins in a lot of ways. Like, I think they've made the combat significantly better. I think they've made sort of some of the mission structure and the way you explore the world better. It's got all the ship stuff from Black Flag, and you know that's my shit. I love it. It's so big, and there's just so much to do in it. it kind of inevitably feels like it's a game I play to turn my brain off. And it is a game I turn a podcast on, unless I'm like listening to dialogue in the game. And I run around and I do forts and I explore. And that's fun. It looks great. Greece is cool. We all love ancient Greece.
Yes.
But I don't know. It's like it's so much. It feels like every time I play it, I'm going to a buffet and stuffing my face primarily from like the fried chicken and dessert end and like skipping the salad bar. And I feel kind of like gross when I'm done with it because I... Because there's no point playing Assassin's Creed Odyssey, no matter what play session you're doing, where you feel like you've made progress. It's so big. And I felt that a little way about Origins, too. The thing Origins had is I think Origins has a truly very good story. And I think Byleth
is an amazing character. I love him.
Byleth is from Fire Emblem. Byleth is from... And I loved Byleth, yeah. And unlike his wife, that was a great Assassin's Creed story. Odyssey is fine. And it's got some of the RPG stuff, like, very much taken from, like, Witcher 3, Mass Effect, that kind of thing that's fun, where you can, like, make dialogue options and be an asshole, or just kill someone, or...
Just sleep with everybody you run into.
Oh, yeah, and I've done that. As Cassandra, my Cassandra is fucking horny as shit. Literally every time I have an opportunity to sleep with someone, I have slept with them. It's great. Man, woman, doesn't... It's ancient Greece. It doesn't matter. Uh-huh. That feels, like, very proper for the setting. So that's fun. But it is just the, like, largesse of it, and that the vast majority of the game takes place outside the main quest line, which so far is pretty dull. But there are also, like, really good things about it. Like, it has this mercenary system that kind of feels like the Nemesis system from the Middle-earth games, where as you get a bounty, they send mercenaries after you, and you have to kill the mercenaries or pay off your bounty. I've never paid off a bounty. I kill all the mercenaries. And that's really fun, because it adds this, like, level of chaos where sometimes you're storming a fort, and you're trying to be stealthy going around, and then a mercenary finds you, and it'll run into the fort and just start tearing shit up. It's like, fuck, there's this like level 20 mercenary I've got to go kill. And then on the mercenary screen, it shows you as you kill them, you go up the ranks of mercenaries.
Nice.
That's awesome. Early in the story, you find out that there's this evil cult. It's an Assassin's Creed game. Of course there's an evil cult.
Yes, except for it's like 200 BC, so you can't call them Templars yet.
Yes, so it's the Cult of Cosmos.
Yeah.
And you get this whole tree where it looks like Cassandra has made like the fucking conspiracy wall from Homeland or something. And you have all of them, and you have to uncover them and like find clues, and then you get them, and you can put them on your map and go assassinate them. That's awesome. That's really cool and fun. But most of this stuff that I really enjoy about the game kind of has nothing to do with the story. And without that spine, I kind of often feel like I'm playing just to kind of kill time. And that can be fun. And there's totally a place for that in gaming. It's like it's why I'm glad Assassin's Creed like exists as a thing. I don't need every open world game to be The Witcher 3 and take 120% of my attention.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I want it to have a little more substance. I feel like if we could get a nice middle ground between like Origins and Odyssey, with some of like the cool thematic stuff that I think Assassin's Creed at its best has done, like the idea of growing past piracy in Black Flag, or some of like Bayek and his wife stuff in Origins, and you know, the best Assassin's Creed team is doing Valhalla, so I have high hopes for that.
Yeah, and I feel like some more details have come out in like interviews here and there since their quote unquote gameplay debut that has felt like it seems like that's the approach they're trying to take, is finding a more like even balance, not just between Origins and Odyssey, but between new Assassin's Creed and old Assassin's Creed,
exactly.
And finding some of that of like, you know, making it so that a proper Hidden Blade assassination one hit kills people, and it doesn't matter what your level is because you're an assassin and you're jumping someone from the shadows with a knife and sticking it in their throat, and they should probably just die from that.
Yes.
You know, Assassin's Creed is a franchise, you know, that I have always thought is hilarious that it's called that, because it has historically been fucking terrible at stealth.
Yes.
And it's like the slow progress over the last 13 years that they've been making Assassin's Creed games to be at like mediocre stealth, which is what it feels like. At least Origins had this, like, this is good enough. But it used to be like, the stealth of these games is fucking terrible. You couldn't even crouch.
I don't know if I would even go as far as mediocre. I think it's gotten to the point of stealth 101. Because you can crouch, you can whistle, and you can kill from the shadows.
Yeah.
But
you can go in big bushes.
Yes. But that's stealth 101. What it needs, and this is my biggest single problem with Odyssey, and I had this with Origins as well. The combat is very good, but the combat is really not built for taking on big crowds. And that's okay, because they want to disincentivize you from always fighting.
Yeah.
If you have a stealth system, you have to disincentivize from always fighting, right?
Yeah.
And so I like the combat a lot, but sometimes I'm forced into combat because the stealth just isn't good enough. I want the combat as it is, I think, is great. The stealth needs to be so much better, because if all you can do is crouch, whistle, maybe throw a pot, it's just not enough for like the big environments they've built. It needs, like, not as developed as Hitman, but something like Hitman, where there's a little more like chemistry to the game, and like you can spot patterns and maybe leave stuff in the environment and just play tricks on people. And there's none of that. And yeah, one they thing really
is,
need that.
One of the things that's interesting with that is I feel like it's actually, like, to complicate the way we're talking about Assassin's Creed stealth, it is not just that, like, it has gone from bad stealth to, like, okay, good enough stealth, whatever it is, now. It's more that, like, what they are lacking in stealth has just flipped. Because old Assassin's Creed used to give you a comically huge array of tools and things you could use with, like, poison darts and smoke bombs and coin bombs and berserk darts and a crossbow and throwing knives and this and that. And, like, by the time you got to Assassin's Creed Revelations, that game had, like, three different tools for every possible thing you could ever conceive of to do in that game, because they already had all the stuff they could possibly think of, and then they added a crafting system on top of it that made different items that did the same stuff you already could do with all the items you had. And then you had all the cool crowd stuff, which is one thing they said they're bringing back for Valhalla, is some of, like, the crowd stealth that has a slightly Hitman kind of quality to it, which that would be good to bring back. But they had all this, like, all these doodads, but you couldn't fucking crouch. Like, you couldn't do basic, fundamental stealth-style gameplay. Was just not supported. And so all the tools just felt wasted because the basic fundamentals just weren't there. And then now they have the basic fundamentals, but they don't have enough of the extra doodads on top of it to, like, really kind of fully customize and flesh out your stealth gameplay experience. And it's interesting the way that they've kind of... And part of that, I think, is because the settings have shifted from sort of like metropolitan centers, which is what Assassin's Creed used to be about, and then now it's about Witcher 3-style big open landscapes with small pockets of humanity, which means that a lot of the old stealth stuff they did doesn't make sense anymore in their settings, but they haven't replaced it with anything. Yeah. And so the gameplay still feels shallow in that way, which is, again, hilarious for a game that is called Assassin's Creed, that the stealth has never been particularly good, or it's often been very bad.
It is hilarious, and, you know, I do want to stress, especially the more I level up and get stuff, I really do enjoy the combat in Odyssey. The combat was a sticking point for me with Origins, because I thought it was pretty limited, but they've added, like, kind of a Diablo-esque ability sort of wheel, where you hold a button and then you do a shortcut, and I cannot tell you how much enjoyment I get out of the Spartan kick in this game. And just, like, my favorite thing to do is when I'm fighting a kind of heavy enemy, I will go up on a big roof, wait for him to follow me, and when he gets up, I Spartan kick him off and he dies from fall damage. I have a video that I need to tweet out because I made it on my Xbox, and I need to tweet it out, where I was fighting this guy and we were on a big cliff and I kicked him off one side of the cliff and he falls down to, like, one level of the cliff and he's half dead, and I jump down and kick him off again and I keep kicking him until he falls into the water and dies, and then I have to go swim and get his stuff, and it's great, and that stuff's so cool. Uh-huh. And that's a level that I don't think Assassin's Creed has ever hit with the combat, where it's that expressive.
Yeah,
I think Assassin's Creed combat has always been very sort of stock, if you feel like kind of a puppet with it.
Yes,
but it feels very expressive now, and I love that. I want them to get the stealth to the same level. I want them to focus a little more. One thing I know Ashraf Ismail said in a recent interview about Valhalla is that they kind of regret how much the last two games never sort of make you revisit. It's always you're moving forward and seeing new stuff.
Yeah.
And so they're having kind of a home base a la Red Dead 2 that you're building out. That's a great idea. Yeah. That's something they very much need.
Yeah, so, which is, again, like, one of the things that old Assassin's Creed did very well. It was, like, flesh out those spaces. Like, one of the best parts about Assassin's Creed Brotherhood was the villa that you always came back to. Like, 2 had that. Then Brotherhood also brought that into the modern-day stuff, which was good. But, yeah, then once they went to Origins and became so sprawling, they definitely lost that capacity to, like, make you really kind of come back to revisit places and kind of really get to know the world you were in more in depth. Because, yeah, once you finished this block of the game, you just moved on and never looked back.
Exactly. And, you know, I don't want to sound too negative. Odyssey is a really good game.
Yes, and so is Origins. Like, yeah, I love, like, Origins.
But if you are vaguely interested in ancient Egypt or ancient Greece and you vaguely like Assassin's Creed-style games, 100%. These games, you can get them for like $10 to $15. They're great values, and I bought my Odyssey copy for $15. I have more than gotten my money's worth, even if I don't play another second. So, but it's just it's a series. We've always felt this way about Assassin's Creed. It's a series with so much raw potential. I always want them to tap it more than they have.
It's a series that feels like that Assassin's Creed to me is still kind of waiting for its like 10 out of 10 game that it feels like is in there, and they've gotten close. With like Assassin's Creed 2 in its day, I think was close to that. Assassin's Creed 4 in its day was close to that. But even then, you know,
too many follow missions.
Yeah, there's too many like too much dumb bullshit, too much like weird animus stuff. Although Assassin's Creed 4,
it's pretty funny.
Yeah, it's pretty well done in that game, even if it is very like nonsensical in some ways.
But it's literally you play these games and they are literally brimming with development talent. It's amazing to behold.
And they're so unique with their approach to history that no other game franchise does.
Yeah. So like I'm very glad they exist, and I am always kind of rooting for them to be the best versions of themselves. And who knows? Like I said, last time they switched generations was Black Flag, and I think that's one of the best open world games of its kind. So I have high hopes for Valhalla. But anyway, that's all my stuff, Sean. Do you have any stuff for us?
I've got a couple of stuff. I don't have much in terms of updates on Yakuza 5, mostly because I've spent most of the last week like finishing up After War Gundam X and realizing I had like vastly underestimated how much the remote learning stuff had complicated grading for the last week, because there's so many different policies about like, students couldn't get an F, you had to give them no credit instead. Nobody could have a grade that was lower than their first 9-week grade to sort of compensate for the fact that, you know, remote learning was completely fucked, especially at the beginning when there was very little guidance around it.
Yes.
So that just meant like there was a lot of very technical, like in one hand it was good technical work to do because now I know our grading software incredibly in a very detailed way. It's like they ask you to do shit that like the grading software is like barely supports, and so you have to kind of master what is there to be able to do what they want you to do, and like changing the grading model in all these different ways and accounting for changing it for individual students based on what they've asked for, and then it's like all this really complicated stuff, which means I'm sure that means we're probably going to switch to a different software in the near future and all that learning will have gone to waste, because that just feels like how this stuff works. I just did not have a huge amount of time to do stuff, but I did do a couple of things. One thing is I got my Samurai Jack Complete Series Blu-ray set came in, which I'm very happy about, and I did watch the first 3 episodes last night, which the first 3 episodes are basically one 90-minute episode because it was the pilot. And I'm very happy to report that Samurai Jack holds up incredibly well. It is such a good fucking TV show.
How does it look on Blu-ray?
It looks very good. There are a couple of shots that look a little bit fuzzy, and I knew that I read reviews on this, and I knew it was going to be a thing for the original seasons that sometimes when they do like really harsh zooms and stuff like that on characters, the quality of the video looks a little bit fuzzy because they are zooming in on the animation cell, right? And that, I think, when like upscaled to 4K becomes a lot more obvious. But that's like a very occasional thing that you notice. Generally speaking, it just looks fucking gorgeous. And episode 3 in particular, which is the basically their version of Seven Samurai. But Samurai Jack's version of Seven Samurai is there's one samurai, and his name is Jack. There are no peasants. Instead of peasants, it's a race of talking dogs that ask Jack for help. And instead of bandits, it's a giant army of evil beetle robots that Jack single-handedly, with the use of all these tools that he gets, the help of the dog setting up all these tracks or traps. Basically, the first half of the episode, because it's a Cartoon Network show, so there's like a fade-to-black commercial break that's in the middle of each episode that they use really well. The first half is just them setting up traps and like using this like machinery to create weird catapults and digging pits and filling them with spikes. Jack befriending this weird alien horse monster, then building this cool set of like makeshift armor for Jack. And that's the whole first half of it, including a section where he literally draws a map. It is very much they're doing the Seven Samurai thing.
Get that Takashi Shimura energy in there.
Yeah, because I had never really, because this episode is one of my favorite episodes of animation when I was a kid, of like any of those kinds of cartoons. But I don't think I'd ever really thought about it in detail since I have seen Seven Samurai. And so I'd never realized oh, yeah, this is literally just Seven Samurai stuff. But yeah, then the second half of the episode is just you seeing how all the traps work out in Jack slowly destroying this massive, ridiculous, seeming never-ending army of giant evil beetle robots that Aku sends to kill him. And then it ends with all the traps being expended. There's still like 20 of the robots left. Jack is like cut up and his fucking gi is ripped off and all this shit. And it's just him with his sword and he cuts through them. And then that's when they do the thing that like has stuck in my mind forever, which is as he's cutting through the robots, they go slow motion, which looks very nice when you're on the Blu-ray and you can, because you're just looking at literally individual frames of animation at that point that they've put a lot of care into, and they just put a shit ton of individual frames of animation because that's what slow motion is. And it's just he cuts through a robot and then geysers of oil shoot out from the robot and splash on him, concluding with the last one in which he jumps up, slices vertically in half, and is passing through the two halves as they separate, and then like pipes shoot oil at him as he's in the middle, and Jack lands in his fucking hair, his like braid has come undone and his hair is all bedraggled, he's covered in cuts that are like colored red, and then over all of that he's just drenched in oil. And I love seeing all the ways that Gendy Tartakovsky and his team got this show to be on Cartoon Network, because this is a show that aired next to Ed, Edd n Eddy and Courage the Cowardly Dog and Powerpuff Girls and all that kind of stuff. And then you have the show that, like, there maybe was like 10 lines of dialogue in that entire 30-minute episode of cartoons, which never happened, right? Like Western animation, it's like, because it's made for kids, you just have characters shouting at you 100% of the time. And there's so little dialogue in Samurai Jack, and it is fucking glorious.
It's amazing to me that it ran the four seasons it did.
Yes.
Like, I know it got canceled and had to come back later, but, like, how did it run that long?
Yeah.
I mean, fuck, like, Tartakovsky went from Dexter's Lab to this. This was the follow-up to Dexter's fucking Lab, which is also a great show.
Yeah.
But it's not Samurai Jack.
That's a kid's cartoon.
Yes.
And I think the thing that, like, watching Samurai Jack now as an adult, it's so much fun and it's so fascinating to see what felt like Tartakovsky trying to make something that didn't actually fit into the box he was given. Like, the idea of this airing on Cartoon Network is kind of silly to me. But at the same time, there's like, there are no real platforms in America or in like the Western world in general for like animation that's aired on TV that is for an older audience that isn't Venture Brothers, like Adult Swim style stuff, right? Like,
or the Simpsons, you know, sitcom stuff. Yeah.
So it feels like the gap between cartoons for kids and cartoons for adults is like so huge. And the kind of the thing that, like, as you know, fans of anime, Japanese animation has this huge variety that it can fill because the market supports it in the culture that it's in.
There's different airing times on TV.
Yeah, and lots of different stations that specialize in it, and like a really robust merchandising system that can support those kinds of shows. That
you're either going to buy your gacha toy or you're going to get a sex pillow. That's the kind of difference.
Exactly, yeah. And so you can have a raunchy sex comedy, you can have a little kid's show, and then you can have everything in between, and there's a huge spectrum of shows. Whereas in the West, it just feels like every 3 years or so, you get something like a Batman the Animated Series, Gargoyles, Samurai Jack, Avatar the Last Airbender, something like that that fits more of this. I mean, it's not serialized television per se, it's particularly not with Samurai Jack, but it is more like theme-based, more character development, more about the story, and is not comedic. There are funny bits in Samurai Jack, there are funny bits in Avatar, there are funny bits in Batman the Animated Series, but they are not comedy shows. They're like action drama shows.
Well, and notice how the market has changed, because your Blu-ray box, Sean, is now marketed as Adult Swim.
Yes.
Is what it says on it.
Yeah,
and
Adult Swim was what supported the fifth season. Yeah.
And I wanted to say, if you are hearing this and like, I need to watch this show and don't want to buy a whole $60 Blu-ray set, when HBO Max launches next week on May 27th, or tomorrow from when you're hearing this, it'll have the full Adult Swim collection, including all five seasons of Samurai Jack. So that's really cool, but that's kind of funny. It's not in the Cartoon Network collection, which they'll also have. It's specifically now in the Adult Swim collection, which is probably the right place to put it, but it is kind of funny.
And I think the first four seasons of Samurai Jack, and I haven't seen season 5, but what I understand is that it is more Adult Swim, like more.
I think there's actual blood, not just oil.
Yes. There is actually a surprising amount of, like, there's not blood in Samurai Jack, but I was actually surprised. I was like, oh, I didn't remember that the cuts on him are actually colored red. This, like, feels like more than I would have thought that they could get away with. But there is still a lot of stuff in the first 4 seasons where you just see, like, even down to the opening theme song of Samurai Jack is split into 2 halves. The first half is the one that everybody remembers, which is the speech that Aku gives about, like, long ago in a distant land, I, Aku, shape-shifting master of darkness, unleashed an unspeakable evil. And he gives his whole thing, I ripped up a portal of time, and now the fool seeks to return to the past to undo the evil that is Aku. And then after that, I had completely forgotten Samurai Jack has a theme song, and it's like a weird rap theme song that it then moves into that's like, back to the past come, hoorah, Jack, whatchack, and it does that, and I had forgotten that that was a thing entirely, and I haven't seen an episode of Samurai Jack since I was like 12 or something. I was quoting along with the first time at the beginning of episode 2 that Aku's like opening thing starts. I remembered every single word of it, and I had utterly forgotten that the theme song even existed because it is so incongruous with the rest of what the show does and what it does so well. And it's really funny to just see all these things and like some of the sound effects that are like really generic Cartoon Network sound effects that just don't fit with the rest of the show. And there really is this feeling of this is a show that like had to make these like really obvious compromises to exist at all. But I'm very happy that it exists at all because it, yeah, Sean, I had a great time watching those first 3 episodes.
Does the Samurai Jack rap need to be our theme song this week?
If sure, yeah.
Because I haven't chosen one yet.
Yeah.
All right, well, you've already heard it. That's our theme song this week.
Yeah, so
there we go.
So you got the Samurai Jack theme song. Yeah. And then just to talk a little bit more about the Blu-ray set, because it is very nice. So, like, all of the seasons come in separate discs. I have my season 1 is over by my PlayStation, so that's why you don't see it, Jonathan. If this version comes with a nice, like, metal plate that is a
I didn't
frame.
Get that.
Yeah, so there are 2 different versions of it. There's a slightly more expensive, like, collector's version that comes with this thing.
Well, how much did you pay for yours?
$50, I think.
That's what I paid. I think I ordered the same thing.
Oh, maybe.
Because I also, did you get a digital copy code with yours?
No.
I didn't get one with mine either. Oh, it doesn't matter, but anyway.
Yeah, then you have all the different boxes, which I really like. Basically, the art for each individual box is it feels like a... like the reverse cover of a PS4 game.
Yes.
Because it's the blue Blu-ray box, and then it is just art with the only text on it at all is very small on the spine that just tells you the season. And they basically pick one of the standout episodes of the season to do the art for the cover. I mostly just say this to say that I was very happy when I was looking at them. I picked up the fourth season one because they picked my favorite episode of Samurai Jack, where Jack fights the robot ninja. And the whole second half of that episode is stark black and white with Jack dressed all in white, and he's hiding in the light of this like warehouse they're in, and the robot is dressed all in black, is hiding in like the stark black shadows, and it's this just completely not completely silent, but I think it has no music. It is just them jumping from place to place, moving between stark white and stark black. When Jack is in the white, he's invisible. When the robot's in the black, it's invisible. And it is like the best fucking piece of animation that the West has put out on TV maybe ever. So I'm very excited to get to that. And yeah, it was just like looking at that and watching those episodes made me realize I haven't seen Samurai Jack in a long time, but it made a huge impression on me because all the detail I remember, excepting the theme song, which is a funny thing to have forgotten, it is so precise how much I remembered sequences of the show that a lot of times when you go back and watch that kind of stuff that you saw as a kid and you think you remember, and you realize, oh, my memory of this was actually really off, not with the Samurai Jack. Like, the whole ending sequence of episode 3, I remembered beat for beat, and it is exactly as I remembered it, and it was very cool to watch it again.
Awesome. Well, cool. And I will definitely be watching more of this, and I'm sure other people, I'm sure that'll actually be a huge hit on HBO Max. I can just imagine that's going to be one of those shows people like discover again. Like, every streaming service has one of those.
Yeah.
Clone Wars has been that for Disney Plus, even before the new season came out.
Yes.
For a lot of people, I think, including me. So yeah, lots of that sounds great. We're going to have to do Weekly Suit Samurai Jack at some point.
Yeah. And I mean, the nice thing about Samurai Jack is that it is very much an each episode is its own story kind of show. So like, I'm just planning on occasionally watching an episode or two here or there while I'm doing other stuff. and it's been a while since I... Because the last show I had like that was when I was rewatching Clone Wars. So it's been a while since I had like something that I could just pick up every once in a while and watch a couple of episodes. So
yes,
that's very good. Awesome. Samurai Jack, two thumbs up. That show, if you watched it as a kid and you liked it, it is one of those shows that still holds up, and you will like it even better, I think, as an adult, because you will appreciate all the love and care and like the references that they put in there.
Awesome. Well, do you want to move on to the news, Sean?
Yeah, what's going on in the news, Jonathan?
Well, speaking of HBO Max, HBO Max is, if you don't know, that is the new Warner Media streaming service. They're branding it with HBO because that's a brand people know, but it is a new service. It is basically Warner Brothers' answer to Disney Plus. It'll have the whole Warner catalog, including stuff they've acquired or own. Like, I think their marquee thing right now is they're going to have all of Friends and The Big Bang Theory.
Yay.
Not cool for us, but
yeah,
like,
yeah, no, care. It's going to be very big for them. I'm perplexed that, like, how people still can watch Friends, because I watched an episode of Friends a few years ago. I'm like, I liked this okay when I was a kid, and it is not the 90s anymore, and the show makes me feel sick sometimes when I was watching it. Like, I can't deal with the, like, this show's whole thing right now. I can't deal with.
No. But, yeah, and I don't think The Big Bang Theory has ever streamed, so that's probably big for all the grandmas who think that represents nerd culture. But anyway, they will have other stuff. They're going to have all the DC stuff. I think that means Batman Animated and all that stuff. They're going to have Adult Swim. They're going to have Cartoon Network. They're going to have the entire Studio Ghibli catalog, because they bought that, because Disney fucking sucks and for some reason didn't want to own Ghibli anymore, which is weird, but their loss. So that's the first time those movies are going to be streaming. They were going to be launching with some really big marquee things, including a Friends reunion special, but that was not able to shoot because of coronavirus. So HBO Max is in this weird position where they have this great catalog they're launching with, but they don't have like some big marquee thing to get people interested. I think their big show they're launching with is this show called Love Life with Anna Kendrick, which got completely panned, despite Anna Kendrick being awesome. So, what do we do? How do we get everybody to write about HBO Max the week we're launching, but we don't actually have anything to put on there as a new marquee thing? What's this hashtag? Release the Snyder Cut? Huh. Thus, HBO Max has announced this week that they will be funding the production of the Zack Snyder cut of Justice League for release in 2021. I've got a big spiel here, Sean, so let me give all the details and then we'll react.
I mean, well, because we know, of course, obviously, that the Snyder cut was a version of the movie that just existed. It's just, you know, it just takes 1 year for it to upload to the service. But they're just taking it off the shelf and just uploading it untouched because it was just a thing.
So to back up, Justice League, if you did not follow this entire drama, and maybe you did, but you need a recap, because I sure as shit did, because I read about it again. So Zack Snyder made Man of Steel, he made Batman v Superman, then they were going to do Justice League. Now, Justice League was originally going to be a Justice League Part 1 and 2, Batman v Superman was very poorly received, so they said, let's just do one movie for now. Zack Snyder shoots that movie, he's in post-production, they have a couple of cuts, nothing's quite working, and then, very, very sadly, his daughter committed suicide. And so he steps away from Justice League to deal with family issues. And so does his wife, Deborah Snyder, who is the producer on the movie.
Yeah.
So the family tragedy, they leave. This is not a case where like he was just fired. It was a family tragedy. Joss Whedon was already working with him on some rewrites. And Joss Whedon steps in to direct the reshoots that were, we should note, already planned. Zack Snyder was going to do reshoots. He couldn't complete them. Joss Whedon comes in, and because now they have a new director, Kevin Tsujihara and some of the other execs at Warner Brothers step in and make some really big like corporate decisions, including, if you're wondering why Justice League runs exactly 120 minutes on the dot, that's because Kevin Tsujihara said it cannot run over 120 minutes. So that's why that movie runs exactly 120 with credits. So there's that. Joss Whedon shoots what at the time was believed to be about 30% of the movie. I think we have come to know it was quite a bit more than that. And the movie comes out and is not terrible in the way like some, but it's like it's barely even a movie.
It is like the definition of an unremarkable movie. It is a movie that just exists, that has one vaguely cool scene in it, which is when the Justice League fights Superman. And it's like, I watched that on YouTube, that clip on YouTube after this news came out, and I was like, all right, this like 2 minutes of this movie is a fun scene to watch on YouTube. And then I saw like a bit of another clip, I'm like, oh yeah, but the rest of the movie is not something I want to watch again.
All right, so ever since then, fans have been agitating online, we'll say, for the Snyder Cut, with the hashtag release the Snyder Cut, out of the belief that grew very weirdly, that Snyder had completed the movie, Warner Brothers took it away from him, gave it to Joss Whedon, and had Joss Whedon butcher it, which is not what happened.
Yeah.
Snyder was working on it. He didn't get to finish it. Someone else finished it. Weird, right? But yeah. It got more and more steam. Members of the cast, including Gal Gadot, kind of said they'd like to see it because people probably asked them too many times and they were finally like, yes, shut the fuck up. Can I talk about Wonder Woman?
Yeah.
You assholes.
Because this was has been a persistent thing since before the release of Justice League movie in theaters. So it has been going on for several years at this point.
Yes.
Seemingly nonstop.
This week we learned through this HBO Max announcement that mythical cut does not exist.
Yeah.
Obviously.
Because that's how movie production works.
Yeah. According to The Hollywood Reporter, which had a big in-depth story on this, Zack Snyder had a four-hour assembly cut, which is when you just put all your footage together. It's not a finished movie. And he had a 2.5-hour potential theatrical cut, neither of which were agreed to be suitable. And that was between him and the studio. No one was quite happy with it. And these are also cuts that would not have had visual effects. They would not have had dubbing. They would have not had color timing, all of that stuff. So he leaves the project. And that's kind of where it was left. So now he and Deborah Snyder, his wife, producing partner, are currently reassembling the post-production team to, quote, score, cut, add new and finish old visual effects, and bring back actors for ADR. There will not be reshoots. According to the Wrap reporter, Humberto Gonzalez, that was actually a red line from WB on this, that they're not going to pay to, like, get all the actors back. Still, sources say this could cost up to $30 million. And they are eyeing either a four-hour film release version or a six-hour miniseries. Somehow, we'll talk about that in a minute.
Uh-huh, yeah.
Now, we do not know everything that will be different, but there is some stuff that is well-known, like public knowledge. So, for instance, pretty much all of Superman's footage was reshot by Whedon. We know that because he has a CGI lip.
Yes, you could tell by the CG lip, which is going to be the tragic loss of the Snyder Cut, no longer having the hilarious Henry Cavill. And because it wasn't just that they had to CG out the mustache, it was like the crazy fucking power play between studios that caused that to happen was the best part.
Yes, if you forget, that's because he had a mustache for the Paramount Pictures production of Mission Impossible Fallout, a very good movie.
Yeah.
And Paramount basically, the director of that movie, I'm forgetting his name now, but the director of Mission Impossible, Chris McQuarrie.
Yeah, McHugh.
Yeah, Chris McQuarrie offered to CGI it on their side, CGI the mustache in, because it wouldn't cost that much. And then Paramount said, fuck no. And
Have you seen that mustache? It's pretty fucking good. It's a pretty good mustache in the movie.
Chris McQuarrie was trying to be like a nice guy with his like probably buddy Joss Whedon.
Yeah.
And then Paramount was like, fuck no. And Warner Brothers had to spend like $10 million giving him a CGI lip and it looks awful. So everything with Superman is going to be different.
Yeah.
Darkseid was in the original version. He's not the main villain. Steppenwolf is still there, but he appears, especially at the end, I think they fight him a little bit. Multiple characters from the Justice League's different worlds appeared in Snyder's footage, including Iris West, Adam, Eleanor Stone, and Mira and Vulko from Aquaman. We were going to find out Harry Lennix's character from Man of Steel was Martian Manhunter. There's a final battle. The final battle was 100% reshot by Whedon. There was more Flash time travel stuff in the original version, including more about that weird future scene from Batman v Superman. There was more footage with Lex Luthor. And all parties agree that Cyborg was going to be much bigger in the movie, and some described him as kind of the heart of the film, which actually makes sense to me, because why would you have Cyborg if you weren't going to do something with him?
Yeah.
Which the Whedon cut does not do anything with Cyborg. What won't be different, notably, is the film's approach to humor. A lot of fans hate the original cut of Justice League because they think it's got a lot of dopey humor. Almost none of that is Joss Whedon. That is well known to be Snyder. And maybe that's because Zack Snyder isn't a comedian and Joss Whedon is, and Joss Whedon's humor isn't usually that flop sweaty.
Yeah.
So,
which, to be fair, part of that is like a studio direction saying, like, Man of Steel and Batman v Superman are some dour fucking superhero movies.
Yes.
Maybe lighten it up a little bit, dude.
Yeah. So, Sean, what's your reaction to all this?
My immediate reaction was me just thinking through all the great movies that got butchered for different reasons and never got finished.
Yeah.
And will never be finished. You know, like, basically everything in Orson Welles' entire filmography outside of Citizen Kane that is just in this disastrous state that you have to, like, kind of cobble together. And then Justice League is the movie that gets $30 million, which is enough money to make another fun, just a different movie. Obviously not like a huge, big, like, blockbuster superhero movie, but more than enough money to make a bunch of other would be better movies if you threw them at the right people.
That's about a third of what Birds of Prey got for its entire production.
Yeah, so it's like, that's a considerable amount of money to throw at making the Snyder version of Justice League.
Which isn't going to be good either. Like, no. Let's just be clear.
Especially if it's going to be 4 hours long. There is no possible way. There's just no way that it could be good. It's not a feasible thing. Like, I, you know, maybe it was a little bit of a harsh thing that the studio did originally, but saying this movie shouldn't be over 2 hours for the Justice League movie, they were right. It shouldn't have been.
Yeah, like 2.5 max. Yeah. That's like, the original Joss Whedon Avengers is like 2:15, and that's, yeah, that seems reasonable to me. That's my reaction to Sean, is that of all the things that could get this much hype and could get this much agitation online and could get this much money thrown at it, fucking Justice League?
Yeah.
Really? Like, I know Justice League is an abstract property, sure. This Justice League with that Superman and that Batman and that Flash and that Cyborg?
And that Steppenwolf.
Fucking no. Who gives a fucking shit? Like, I completely 100% believe that his cut will probably be better than the Joss Whedon one. That doesn't make it good. That doesn't, like, because I will agree, Batman v Superman feels more like a movie to me than Justice League.
Yeah.
I also hate Batman v Superman more because there's more to hate in it.
Yeah.
Like, it's so dumb. It's so frustrating to feel, like you said, of all the movies that have been fucked over, and this wasn't even a case of being fucked over. This was a mutual decoupling because of a family tragedy, and that sucks, and like, I'm glad the Snyders get to like some closure on this, but yeah, like, it's so annoying. Because also, I think people need to understand, this still will not be his finished quote-unquote vision.
No, because this is going to be a setup for movies that don't exist and will not be made. Like, yeah, they're never going to get the payoff. Like, and that's the thing that for like the Zack Snyder fans, I feel like this is a... It's you're never going to get the world that you want. It's just never going to happen. You're never going to get the like payoff for the nightmare sequence from Batman v Superman. Like, you're never going to get the full payoff for the Flash bullshit.
Yeah.
Like, it's you're going to get a little bit more of that stuff, but you're never going to get the weird thing that you want. I don't understand why people, you know, the Zack Snyder people like Batman v Superman. I don't get it. But even if that is who you are, you're never going to get the thing that you want.
No, because it would have been not just multiple more movies, but Snyder himself was going to do reshoots.
Yes.
He himself said it wasn't finished. So, like, he is working with unfinished material, and short of spending $100 million and getting all the actors back, there is no way to do that. There is no way to finish this movie to that potential. And the 4 to 6 hour thing, I need people to understand what an assembly cut is.
Uh-huh.
When a movie is made, the editor is usually on set or nearby, and every day they cut together the dailies, and you look at them. And when the movie is over, they cut together an assembly, which is, according to the script, here's everything we shot in order, like the best take of everything in a row, and then from that you whittle down. It's like the piece of marble that you then make a statue out of.
Yeah, which every movie does this.
Yes.
And it's whenever you hear about shit that's like, oh, this movie, it's like... had a 6 hour cut and now it's only 2.5 hours. And it's like they just destroyed this endless masterpiece that would have existed. It's like that's not how it works at all.
Yeah, and it for some movies it means deleting a lot of scenes. For a lot of movies it means just cutting scenes down, and like maybe you have too long of a reaction shot, or like there's a line that isn't working. You know, famously the Wolf of Wall Street's assembly cut was 4 hours. They got it down to 3, and Thelma Schoonmaker was asked, well, what did you cut? She said, no scenes are missing.
Yeah.
It was all just trims around the edges to tighten the timing and the jokes and like just different little bits of performances. That's what editing is.
Yes, yes. They so, edited the movie.
Yes,
they edited the movie. That was her answer to that question.
Yes, we edited the movie. So when Zack Snyder, like when they say there was a 4 hour cut, that's not a movie. It is a big mess of footage, but it's not a movie.
Yeah.
And I need people to understand that, because if he turns in a 4 hour Justice League for HBO Max, or God help us all, a 6 hour miniseries, that will be interminable because there is not enough footage to support it.
Yeah, it's not a 4 hour plot movie.
No.
It is 4 hours of footage, right?
Yes.
You're not getting fucking Lawrence of Arabia most, Justice League.
Most movies could do a 4 hour cut, but they would be interminable.
Yeah.
Here's a good example. Superman the Movie by Richard Donner. That movie runs about 2.5 hours, a little less than its theatrical cut. He did a director's cut. But there was a TV version, sometimes called the extended cut, where the Salkins just threw in everything they had. And it runs a little over 3 hours. You can actually find it now. Warner put it out in the Warner Archive on Blu-ray, which is really cool because it is an interesting historical artifact because it aired on TV around the world. I've seen it. It's very fascinating. It doesn't work as a movie at all because it is just all these great scenes you know and love that now go on interminably, or some extra scenes that just don't need to be there. And it is the raw, like, marble from which a great movie was cut, but it's not a movie. That's what Justice League is going to be.
Yeah.
And that's, this is the thing that, like, just, I feel like so many people don't know how movies are made, and...
But they sure do know how to harass people on Twitter.
Yes. You know, if Zack Snyder said, I'm going to do my cut, it's going to be between 2.5 and 3 hours, I'd say, great, go for it.
Yeah.
But it's the elevating him to the level of this genius auteur, which he is not. There's nothing in his filmography that has earned that. I am saying this objectively. I don't really care how much you like him. There are Thomas Kincaids, and there are Vincent Van Goghs, and they are fucking different. And yeah, he is not Martin Scorsese, and he has not earned a four-hour movie.
Mm-hmm.
Just he flat out hasn't. I'm sorry. And I'm not trying to be mean, but this is how it works. Okay? Hasn't earned a four-hour movie, and it sure as shit isn't fucking Justice League. Okay?
Yeah.
So let's all be on the same page about that.
Yeah, because also, like, the Justice League doesn't fix... Like them doing the Zack Snyder cut of Justice League doesn't fix any of the bullshit of, like, them making this movie without having done the legwork for introducing most of the principal yes. characters in their own movies beforehand, which is one of the numerous reasons why Justice League just felt like it fell so flat, is yeah. because maybe now, retroactively, Aquaman, if you watch that movie, maybe that will work a little bit better for you. But Flash, that version of Flash isn't... Hmm?
Well, here's a couple things. Ben Affleck is never playing Batman again. He said yes. this. They're making a new Batman with Robert
yeah,
Pattinson.
That looks way better.
Henry Cavill is never playing Superman again, in no small part because now he has The Witcher and he is fine and he doesn't need it.
Yeah,
they need him more than he needs them. He's not doing it again. I don't think Ezra Miller is ever playing The Flash, if you have not heard. He basically got Me Too'd. He has
totally forgotten about that.
He turned out to be a pretty big asshole, and that movie has been going in circles, and we have learned, I think, that his difficulty to work with is part of that. So that's never happening.
Yeah.
The two characters in that movie that have worked are Aquaman and Wonder Woman. By the time this cut comes out, we will have had two Wonder Woman movies by Patty Jenkins, and Wonder Woman 1984 looks fucking great. So we'll have two of those with a really good incarnation of Wonder Woman. And I like Aquaman by James Wan. I think it's fun, and they have a really good take on Aquaman in that. And those versions of those characters, it's going to be the same actors, but we know they weren't as good in the Snyder material
yeah.
or the Whedon material. So, like, it's all of that. Like if they were doing this akin to the Donner cut of Superman 2, where it was essentially a DVD bonus feature and it was really cool, that's something I like. But doing this, like, $30 million massive production and possibly doing it as a fucking miniseries and all this shit, like, get out of here.
Yeah. It is ridiculous. I'm not going to watch it. Like, I would sooner watch David S. Goyer's Suicide Squad.
No, you wouldn't.
Then I would watch
this. You don't know what you're saying.
How long is his Suicide Squad movie?
It's 2 hours, but it feels longer, and I cannot tell you how bad that movie is.
Jonathan, I have a cell phone. I can okay. check out.
That's fair.
But I don't want to check out for 4 hours. That's most of my fucking day.
I will probably watch it out of sheer curiosity.
I'm fucking masochist.
Because I host a podcast, and it's content. But who knows? We'll see.
You're not making me watch that fucking movie.
The winner here, though, Sean?
Yeah.
Fucking HBO Max. This is so genius. To have done this, like... Because what is it to them? $20 million for a week of free publicity right before they launch? Fucking, that's one of the most genius things I've seen. They don't have anything to actually launch with. So they just do this nebulous Snyder Cut thing, pay $20 million, which is what they would have paid for the Friends special or something.
Yeah.
Boom, everyone's talking about HBO Max. That is, you've got to give them, like you can't knock the hustle there, in the words of Jay-Z. Yeah.
Though I think the one other component of this, though, that we haven't talked about is the fact that the Snyder Cut thing has been a like persistent fan campaign that has... As with any persistent online fan campaign, contained a certain quantity of online harassment
uh-huh.
of various people, that this then now is yet another precedent that is being set that goes back, in my memory, at least to the ending of Mass Effect 3 where that happened and all that bullshit happened with that game, where again, just endless annoying people, and obviously it's like always the vocal minority thing, but it is this like group of people that shout online, some of which get go way over the line and harass people online, and then ultimately the squeaky wheel gets the grease kind of thing, and they end up getting maybe not exactly what they're asking for because they don't know what they're actually asking for, but they're being conceded to in this way by a massive, like, multi-million dollar media conglomerate that is going to then spend tens of millions of dollars giving them this thing that they're asking for. And it is hugely frustrating to see our society and culture continually capitulating to the worst fucking people in the world.
Yeah. Snyder fans on the internet, some of you are very polite and you know who you are and I enjoy interacting with you. Some of you are assholes and you also know who you are and I don't enjoy interacting with you. And it's, I don't know. It's like, because I will say, I just know for a fact if I tweet anything negative about Zack Snyder, I will get something. And sometimes it's polite, but sometimes it isn't. I had to explain again this week why his work is fascist, which I need to stress. I am working on a PhD in film. I do probably know more than you do. I do know what I'm talking about here. And I don't really think it's up for debate. There is fascist imagery in his work. That's just not a...
Yeah, and I think there's like a distinction between like saying Zack Snyder is a fascist and saying there's fascist imagery in his work. Like,
yeah. I don't know him.
Yeah, exactly. So you're not claiming that it's like he is a bad person and he has this ideology because you can't claim that, but you absolutely can objectively make the statement he is using fascist imagery borrowed from Nazi films in his movie. Like, that is incontrovertible. That is just obvious. You can just fucking watch it on YouTube if you want and compare it.
Yes, and maybe someday I will have to do like a video essay on this to show it, because it is also in the text when Batman is saying he's going to teach Superman how to be a man by beating the shit out of him. That's a Nazi thing.
Yeah.
Just so y'all know. Anywho, the world is weird, Sean.
Yeah. I did see, I don't remember who it was, but I did see a very funny tweet, or maybe this was like an Onion headline of... But whatever it was them just basically saying, like, the Zack Snyder cut is released after Boardroom realizes all of their mother's name is Martha.
That was very good. That was an Onion thing, I think.
Yeah, yeah. And I just saw that, and that made me... That was like, well, here's the silver lining of this dark cloud. This is a very funny joke.
How does that movie have fans? That would be... Can you imagine if, like... Because this would be no different to me. If, like, Batman and Robin had some rabid fan base... And was demanding, like, you know how Matt Reeves is making a new Batman movie, was demanding to give Joel Schumacher his third Batman movie?
Uh-huh.
That would be no different than what we're going through.
Yeah. It is the thing that, like, that's the like, essay to be written, is the identifying the... And you can just, like, you know, conduct the experiment yourself of, like, just making random tweets about different artistic figures and different properties and seeing what kind of responses you get. Because there are some things that you can tweet about and nobody's going to say anything about it ever. You know, if you just make a random tweet about Akira Kurosawa, you're not going to get someone in your mentions just out of nowhere. Probably nobody's going to say anything. And then maybe someone will be like, oh man, I love Seven Samurai also, or whatever.
Yeah.
Whereas if you tweet something that you're not even actually talking about Zack Snyder, you're not talking about that Zack Snyder, you're talking about a friend who also happens to be named Zack Snyder, immediately, no matter what it is, someone is going to be jumping in your mentions telling you something about some bullshit.
Here's the hot take I'm going to leave us on this week, Sean.
Okay.
I'm going to get tweets about this.
Okay, good.
Joel Schumacher, Batman Forever, Batman and Robin, exponentially better understanding of Batman than Zack Snyder's Batman v Superman.
Yes, 100%. Easy statement.
We'll see you next week.